It's 10 o'clock on Tuesday, 27th of October, and you're listening to the Circle Day show on Resonance FM. Tonight's show is a music special with Dunstan Bruce, formerly of Chumbawamba and now of Interfang. And what better way to start than with a little bit of music?
We'll be right back.
That was Chumbawamba with Smash Clause 29, part of the campaign against what ultimately became the hated homophobic Section 28, which those who are around and involved in politics in the early 90s remember being a big part of many campaigns. Chumbawamba emerged from the squats of Leeds, though they never really got very far away from them, in 1982, becoming one of the leading lights of the UK's second wave of punk scene. Gradually, though, as the 80s became the 90s, Chumbawamba started to experiment with lots of different elements, including sampling and elements of rap music, to become a much popular and increasingly popular band. In 1997, as we all probably know, they had a global hit with Tub Thumping, a song that can now be heard still associated with many sports events and on the soundtracks of films. The band continued for a number of years and then slimmed down into a much smaller folk band. And then by 2012, the band had decided to call it a day. More recently, former member Dunstan Bruce launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund a new film about the band. Dunstan not only met his target, but actually exceeded it. I spoke to Dunstan just over a week ago on Skype and first asked him, what was the background to the film?
When was it? In 2012, when Chumbawamba finally called it a day, that was the moment at which I thought, right, now I can make a film about what happened to us back in the 90s. I'd been doing this talk for a few years, on and off, about this adventure that Chumbawamba had gone on that ended up them being in the belly of the beast, which was 15 years of being an underground band, an independent band, and then signing to a major, having a massive hit single, and it was about what we achieved, or what we hoped to achieve, when we entered the mainstream, and how successful we were at trying to change the world or make a difference before we sort of imploded and went back into obscurity. So that's sort of the idea of the talk, and that has now become the backbone of the film that I'm making about what happened to Chumbawamba.
In the early days, Chumbawamba were part of the punk DIY scene, distributing their music via audio cassette and appearing on independently produced punk compilations. Over the years, they progressed through a number of independent labels and ultimately a major label, EMI. I next asked Dunstan what it was like returning in some ways to the DIY ethos of the early days using Kickstarter and once again cutting out the middleman.
It was brilliant, actually, because what happened was, obviously I was a bit nervous about setting off on a Kickstarter campaign, especially because one of our fears was that people would be like, oh, surely they made a fortune out of that song, why can't they just pay for the film themselves, why are they asking people to contribute to this campaign? And what we found was there was just masses and masses of goodwill. It was overwhelming, in fact, the amount of interest and passion there was from people, and people getting in touch from years and years ago who I haven't heard from for ages, you know, and supporting the campaign and giving us money and stuff like that. It was just incredible. The response was incredible. And it sort of felt like we were part of a community, you know, like I was part of a community again. Because having spent years not being involved with Chumbawamba at all, I'd sort of lost touch with a lot of that world and those people. So it was brilliant. It was an amazing experience going through that campaign, just, you know, finding people. And people being so willing to share their memories and their, you know, and any sort of artifacts or memorabilia they had. You know, it was a remarkable response. It was fantastic.
I then asked Dunstan where they were with the film and how things were going.
We've done 4 days filming so far. A lot of the stuff, so it's like, it's as much about seeing how we interact as a group of people as it is about showing showing archive footage of what happened and who we were. We're trying to make it in a way where it's not a traditional music documentary. I'm actually in the film. I'm not just directing it. I'm actually in the film as well. And so it's as much about me interacting with other people in the band and people interacting with other members of the band as it is about just saying, then in 1997 this happened, here's some footage of that, then in 1998 this happened, here's some footage of that. So it's trying to do something a bit different with the music documentary genre, I suppose.
And had the process brought up some memories that he may have forgotten, or maybe even some things he never knew about in the first place?
Yeah, completely, yeah. I've got really bad memory. So it's as much an adventure of me finding out about stuff that I completely forgotten about than it is about trying to tell the story. I met with someone from Universal Records. This must be about eight or 9 months ago in London. And he told me loads of stories that I just had no idea that was going on, because it was from his perspective. You know, he was saying about we'd done something, and he'd sort of told me the story about how it had thrown them into a complete panic, and they'd had to sort something out. I can't. He might have been going on Letterman and changing the words to the song, and it had thrown them into a complete panic, and they'd had all this negotiating with the TV company to make sure it was still broadcast. And it was vital for them that it was shown, because it would boost record sales massively, which is what they were interested in. So it was stuff like that we didn't even know was going on in the background. That's interesting. And also other people in the band tell me stuff, you know, because we've all got a different version of events, I suppose, and all different memories. And it's bringing all that together into some cohesive whole. Because it's as much about everybody else's different truths as it is about, you know, there's not this one truth. So it's about this idea that we're exploring everybody's different experiences of the whole escapade.
Next, I asked him whether the film was revealing what kind of influence Chumbawamba and their music had, and whether he was surprised by any of the stories he was hearing about the band's influence, or in particular, Tub Thumping.
I'm not surprised about how enduring the song itself has been, because I'm made aware of that fact on a regular basis, because I either hear it somewhere or somebody texts me to say, I've just heard your song on this program, or do you know they've just used it on this program? And it's amazing the number of times it still is used in various different forms, which is brilliant. You know, I love that. I mean, we always loved the idea that the song had entered popular culture, and that it was a reference point, and a lot of people have memories of that song and know where they were when it came out, or when it was a hit or whatever. And that's brilliant. And, you know, knowing that the song was played in The Rover's Return, knowing that the song was played in The Queen Vic, knowing that Homer Simpson sang that song in an episode of The Simpsons, all stuff like that, you know, those were like moments where we thought, yay, this is brilliant. You know, this song means has become it sort of became bigger than the band, you know, it became a way, it enabled us to do a lot of stuff that we would never have been able to do. So it was brilliant in that sense.
There were, of course, those of us who were fans of Chumbawamba before Tub Thumping turned them into a world famous pop band. So I asked Dunstan then about maybe those of us who are fans of some of their other songs and what influence they think those had. I pointed to the enduring popularity of Enough Is Enough in the Irish indie scene.
A lot of it is from you know, the mainstream, you know, people who randomly get in touch. A lot of people who were hardcore fans would probably say that Tub Thumping was not Chumbawamba's best song, and it was that one should not have been the hit, and stuff like what you said about Enough Is Enough. You know, a lot of people would say, oh, that was a much better song, or Mouthful of Shit, or something like that. Songs like that, which people, which in a way were sort of precursors to Tub Thumping, in a way. You know, particularly songs like Mouthful of Shit, which is like, it's kind of the same sort of structure, really, in a way, as Tub Thumping. But I think people thought it was a much more politically explicit song than maybe what a lot of people thought Tub Thumping was.
At this point, we moved on to some of the stuff that Dunstan is doing now. He's got a new band called Interrobang, working again with Harry Hammer, his former Chumbawamba bandmate, and has been playing a number of gigs with the socialist band, The Faction, including the recent We Shall Overcome weekend, where I saw them playing in Holloway in London. But first, before we get on to talking about that, here's one of their tracks.
Are you ready? questions, and yes, I still believe I am somebody.
We are
don't care about my figure, but I love to sing about something. I never wanted compromises. I don't care about rebel stances. I don't talk about blank stanzas. I don't think about lack of substance. I don't need that ersatz rebellion. I still dream of revolution. For the limousine liberals, I don't want to be absolved by everything I love. The fecal just inherit shit. Shit, 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 and that's it. I never wanted compromises. I don't care about rebel stances. I don't talk about blank stances. I don't think about lack of science. I don't need that ersatz rebellion. I still dream of revolution.
Are You Ready, People, a recent single by Dunstan's new band Interrobang. So, for an artist who was so used to sharing the front of the stage with a number of different characters, as Chumbawamba was famously fronted by a number of different male and female characters, what's it like being the frontman of a much smaller band? Interrobang is only a three-piece.
Well, I've got a massive ego, so I absolutely love it. I love being the centre of attention. it's been brilliant because Interrobang isn't Chumbawamba at all. It's a completely different. It's trying to say something completely different to what Chumbawamba was saying. It's a completely different project. I would never have ever thought of getting back into a band if I didn't feel as though I had something that was worthwhile to say. And so what I did lyrically with Interrobang is try to talk about being a man turning 50. That was when that idea started, and it was about what have you done in your life, what do you do in your life, what have you yet to do, how do you feel about, you know, what's happened to you, and what and still being angry, you know, still being angry after all these years, sort of thing. That's sort of a big thing about what that band's about, and also coming to terms with who I am and what I am, all that sort of stuff. So it was finding Griff, who used to be in a band called Regular Fries. It was like an old friend, a really old friend, and him like saying, look, I can put the music to what you are trying to say. So for quite a long time it was just me and Griff trying to do something. Once Harry got involved, then it all just came together. And that was amazing. I still remember that first rehearsal we had with Harry, where all he'd ever done is listen to some recordings of stuff that me and Griff had done, and we went into a rehearsal room and ran through all the songs, and me and Griff were sort of like, we were sort of like giggling like little schoolboys, because Harry was just spot on with every single song with his drumming. It was just incredible. It was brilliant. So that is something that. I can't sing to save my life. I wouldn't have joined a band just for the sake of joining a band. It was just that was an idea and a project that I wanted to see come to fruition. And we're still in the middle of recording an album, which will hopefully come out next year sometime.
But does he miss those moments where he could put down the microphone and allow Alice, Danbert or Lou to take over vocal duties?
I do find that I'm quite 54 now, I'm a bit shattered. I think that's why we do such a short set, because anything longer would probably kill me. No, I love it. I mean, I believe in every single word that I'm saying up there, and I love the dynamic between the three of us, and it's really, really enjoyable. And having not been on a stage for approximately 9 or 10 years, getting back up there and realising that was something that I was perfectly capable of doing, and really enjoyed was a lovely feeling. It just felt right. It felt really liberating, and it felt like this is something that I can do.
So, turning to a little bit of politics, with the Tories in power and ripping everything to shreds, and class war back on the streets causing trouble, things are kind of like when Chumbawamba got started back in the 80s. So, in terms of the general situation, what would Dunstan like to see happen?
I suppose what everybody would like to see would be that we move to the left a bit, that everybody realises how the Tories are trying to, systematically destroy the working class and the poor. And I would like to see that come to an end, I suppose. Glib, cliched stuff like that. I haven't got a... I think it's fascinating what's happening with the Labour Party, Al Corbyn. Ever since the SNP did so well in Scotland, and that sort of re-energised people's interest in politics, it feels as though Corbyn getting elected as leader of the Labour Party has re-energised people as well. I don't know whether there's a correlation between that and what's going on with class war being back on the streets. I don't know. It's interesting to see what class war are trying to do, because it's not necessarily populist what they're doing. It's pretty confrontational stuff, and reminds me of maybe what I was doing 20 or 30 years ago. But it's not that sort of thing doesn't have a place in politics, because it certainly does. And if it wasn't for people like that pushing things to the extremes, I don't think things would ever move forward. I remember, I was talking to a historian, a friend of mine, Lucy Robinson, the other day, and we were talking about the poll tax riots in 1990, was it? And we were saying that the poll tax riots weren't necessarily responsible for getting rid of Thatcher. It was a lot more complicated than that. It was the Tory party who got rid of Thatcher. It wasn't the poll tax riots. But it was an interesting discussion in that we on the left like to believe it was the poll tax riots that got rid of Thatcher, because we needed a victory. Because we were still smarting from from losing the miners' strike, so I think stuff like that that pushes things to the edge helps us in some way fight back or feel as though we've got a voice, I think is always good, even though I might not necessarily agree with all the methods and all the way they go about stuff. I am very, very glad they exist.
And back to the music to finish up. One of the things I noticed while I was at the We Shall Overcome event in Holloway a couple of weeks ago was how there was a very clear community growing up around, particularly the faction and some of the bands around them, which Ndera Bang have now become part of. So the final question for Dunstan was what he saw happening with that, and was there a new soundtrack potentially to all of the street politics that are starting to happen coming out of that scene?
It's funny because I've been thrown back into a world of there's been an enormous amount of goodwill shown towards the band, particularly by the anarcho-punk community, as it happens. A lot of our early gigs were sort of organised by people who were part of that. The guy called Paul Light in Brighton is championed us massively. There's been other people who have, put on gigs and supported us. But also making this connection with bands like The Faction and The Hurriers and stuff like that has been tremendous, because that's sort of a world that I didn't know. I'd sort of lost touch with all that world, with all that sort of, left-wing, anarchist sort of protest music, which I'd always thought had sort of all but vanished, and that there were only a few, examples of it still existing, and you find out that in fact there's a whole scene going on still, and whether it's just old bands reforming, or whether it's new bands coming up, I think it's great to see. One thing I am sort of aware of is that there's a lot of young people, and I've noticed just through friends, there's a lot of young female bands that seem to be sprouting up everywhere as well, which is just massively fantastic. I think that's really, really encouraging, because I think living in what is largely a male dominated music business, I think it's brilliant to see women. I don't want it to sound patronising, but I just think it's brilliant seeing bands full of women. It's brilliant.
So that's it from me this week. Yodette will be back next week. And to play us out, another track by Interrobang. Here's the soon-to-be-released Are We Invisible Yet?
Into a lather, more or less hoping for complete exoneration, old enough to be a father. Am I invisible yet? Am I invisible yet? Am I invisible?